Welcome, everybody, to the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. My name is Jonathan Lee, Coach Jonathan, and I'm here with two other coaches today where we have Coach Chad Timmerman with us. How you doing, Chad?
Doing well, Jonathan. Thanks.
Good to hear. And a new guest for us on the show, we have another coach on staff here, Alex Kiesis, also our director of support. How you doing, Alex?
Doing well, John. Thanks.
Good. Good to have you here. So today we're going to kick it off by going over your questions and like we always have. But just prior to that, I want to encourage you guys to check us out on iTunes. If you don't know, this podcast is up on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud as well. You can find it on SoundCloud at Trainer Road, or forgive me, SoundCloud.com/Trainer Road. And you can find it on iTunes by just searching for Ask a Cycling Coach or Trainer Road on iTunes. If you feel like it's justified, please leave us a 5-star review and any type of review that you want to leave there. Please go ahead, leave that. Those positive reviews really help us find new people that have more cycling questions and we can answer them for them. So that's a positive thing for all of us. So if this is your first time, or even if you're a return listener and participant in this podcast, you can use the GoToWebinar window to send your questions in. Of course, we have a whole list of questions that you've sent in this week, but please feel free to share your questions with us. The best way to do that is to look in the chat window there with GoToWebinar and to type in your questions to me, and what we'll do is we'll add them into the queue as we move through them. If there's any type of information that perhaps we don't have and you've already submitted a question and you feel like that information would allow us to provide a better response, feel free to add that in as well. No problems at all. So we'll get things started with a question from Chris. Chris says that he's been reading our posts on Slow Twitch, and he'd like our advice. That's perfect. That's what we're here for. So I just finished my last race of the season. It was an Ironman about 2 weeks ago. My goal in the off season is to improve my bike fitness and improve my FTP. I'll be signing up for Trainer Road in the near future. When do you suggest I start? So you mentioned the fact that really you're going to have off-season training going in. You're starting your off season is the best way to say it. Chad, is there any type of general advice that you would give a triathlete fresh off of an Ironman performance leading into the off season?
Yeah, first off, take some time off. Clearly, he's already 2 weeks past it. But typically I see Ironman competitors taking a good 4 to 6 weeks of, not necessarily downtime, but definitely low intensity time afterward before they start building back up. So if your next event allows that, then I would take at least, we've taken 2 weeks, but if you could squeeze in two more, that'd be great. Maybe even a couple extra after that. But in any case, you should feel fresh and motivated when it comes time to kick your base training back into effect.
Yeah, both mentally and physically.
Absolutely.
That's a good point, Alex. That mental fatigue that you have from such a huge effort. I was actually just listening to another podcast, the TRS podcast. If you haven't listened to that, it's a good triathlon one. And they were speaking with Mark Allen, and of course, a legend in triathlon. And he was mentioning the fact that he didn't do as many events as many athletes do these days. And he said that 2 Ironmans a year performing at the level and dedication that he did, it put a lot of load on his body. And he said that he doesn't think that he would have performed well if he would have added more in there.
Yeah, right. A lot of full distance triathletes center their season around a single event. You know, they might have some half Ironmans or some shorter triathlons leading up to it, but their pivotal event is that single full distance triathlon.
Yeah, he mentioned the fact that it was a hugely emotional and mentally taxing endeavor every time to do those Ironman events, right, at that level. And so I think that's a great point that you made there, Alex, is, keep in mind that the mental fatigue as well. If you don't feel extremely motivated to get on the bike, don't necessarily scold yourself for that. You've just done a pretty impressive feat. So it might.
And then also, let me be a little more specific with Chris. If you know when your next event is, you're just going to count back from there. In your case with full distance, you really can't have too big of a base. So, our traditional base plan is 12 weeks long, but there's 2 week extensions recommended for each one of those, which, would extend it to 6 weeks for each of the 3 phases, totaling 18 weeks. And then another 8 weeks to build, another 8 weeks to specialize and peak. So you're looking at as few as 28 weeks, as many as 34 weeks. So if you've got that time, count back, and that'll help you also determine when you're going to kick this off.
And you also, you mentioned, Chris, that you noticed that the first workout is a 20-minute TT, and you asked, should I wait another week before doing that? From currently, I guess that by the end of this week, I assume that it will have been 3 weeks since you sent this question in pretty early, Chris. So Chad, after doing an Ironman 3 weeks in, I mean, I assume a lot of this is based off of how he's feeling and recovering and individual needs that he would have, but
it is, it's also going to depend on when he wants to start training. So if you feel at the end of 3 weeks, you're ready to go, then go ahead and assess. I mean, if you find you're a little tired, maybe your assessment's a little off the mark. It's not like you're married to it. As you start your workouts and you realize things are a little too easy, you're feeling better day by day, you can nudge your number up a little bit at a time. You can even reassess if you feel like you were way off the mark.
Yeah, we don't have a dedicated post-season program, Chris. That was your final question that you asked there. We don't have a dedicated post-season to kind of trend your fitness in any certain direction leading from an event like that. But I think that really the recommendations that Chad brought as far as resting and then what you'll want to get into and the timelines to follow should give you enough information. Anything else to add, Chad, on that?
Yeah, just that a postseason program kind of flies in the face of what we want to accomplish at that time of year. So when you're in between your training seasons and you want a little bit of time off, that doesn't mean you're necessarily off the bike, but it does mean that you're kind of shunning structure at that point in time. You don't really want to lock yourself into anything obligatory or anything that really is outside of the realm of fun. Just enjoy yourself for a little while. So no real structure in that postseason.
Exactly. It's so subjective.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And season after season, I think that you'll probably hone what your postseason program, if you will, figure out whatever routine is best for you and leaves you coming into the next season feeling the freshest and raring to go.
Oh, that's a good point.
Adam, your next question you ask, or you say, I've had some great training runs derailed by colds in the last year. I'm not talking about being bedridden with a flu, but bad coughs that can linger for 2 weeks to a month and are bad enough to prevent full-on training. What kind of plans can I use to maintain my strength on the trainer or at least mitigate some of the strength loss from no training at all? Example, can I get away with 1 to 2 week recovery rides a week? Alex, I know that you deal with seasonal allergies pretty regularly. What would you recommend if a person's going through this type of situation? Should they be following a specific type of training or resting? Do you have any personal experience there that you could share?
This is something that's a little bit subjective. I don't know that my personal routine will work for you, Adam, but when you set out with a training plan, everything is very, you know, neatly in place, but you know, the best laid plans of mice and men so often go awry, that whole thing. My best advice is to just kind of expect the unexpected. And if you do catch a cold, take some time off, recover. And then, ideally you won't have to miss out on too much training. And if it is just a week or a couple workouts, jump right back into wherever you were in the plan. But, if it's a few weeks on end, then I would go back in the plan three weeks or however many weeks you miss and start back then.
Yeah, and in the meantime, Adam, you can get away with low intensity training, so you don't have to necessarily sacrifice your aerobic base, especially if you're to a point where your base fitness is high. Last thing you want are those gains to slip away because they take a long time to rebuild. Anything that doesn't agitate your respiratory system, right? So if coughing's the issue, if it's in the respiratory tract, you can't do anything hard. You don't want to do anything that aggravates it. So you're not going to be able to breathe very hard, but base training actually fits that bill. So you can even more than 1 to 2 times a week, as long as the intensity is low enough, you don't feel you're making yourself any sicker, that you do feel you're progressively, maybe I hope, improving, but not doing any damage in the meantime. Absolutely, those recovery rides and low endurance rides are just fine. And additionally, with strength training, I don't know if you're a proponent of weight training, but if you are, you can get away with that too. Just again, it can't be something that's so high stress that it winds you up in terms of your breathing rate. So anything that keeps your heart rate and your breathing rate low is pretty much permissible.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we touched on this during last week's Q&A. Of course, they're all always unique week to week. But if you do find yourself really getting sick and it's hard to rebound, you can try to kind of harness a lot of the pent-up anxiety or anxiousness, better said, that you may have while not being able to train, and harness that later on at another point. You know, if you may be sick to the point where you certainly would not be improving if you're training on the bike. And if that's the case, if you're really that sick, then don't get too frustrated with yourself. Just try to tell yourself that you're doing the right thing by resting, and you'll have plenty of time to get stronger later on. So that mental recharging can be really powerful. You ask another question, Adam. You mentioned while doing some reading on recovery, you read that you can test your heart rate while still in bed in the morning and compare it to your resting heart rate to get an understanding if you have properly recovered from the previous day or day's workouts. If you haven't then taken that day off training, is that something that people really use, and is it accurate? So I do use this to a certain extent, but there is a grain of salt taken every morning when I look at my heart rate values every morning. But generally, I have a very consistent resting heart rate. It generally rests somewhere at 48 beats per minute. If I change, but to give you an example, this summer at national championships, we were up at, in Mammoth Lakes, California. So the town's elevation is around 8,000 feet, and where we were staying was at about 8,400 feet. So when I was sleeping at that level, my heart rate was elevated substantially compared to what it would be here in Reno, where we live, which is about 4,500 feet. So I had to take that into consideration and know that. And sometimes if you just take these things as gospel without any type of additional information, it can definitely throw a wrench in the spokes, and you show up to a race in a foreign environment or under foreign circumstances, and you see a change in heart rate. Mine went from 48 beats per minute, and it was resting at around 51, 52, which if that was the case back here in Reno, I would definitely look at what changed in my life first. Did I have more caffeine intake? Was I dehydrated, or were my activity levels fluctuating from day to day in an abnormal manner? Or, you know, what did I eat or anything else before jumping to the conclusion that I hadn't rested enough? Once I could narrow out those variables, then I would make any type of conclusions that I would after that as far as my rest levels. But Chad, do you have any information on this?
Yeah, I do. It's actually very valid, Adam. In fact, I do it every day, and I recommend that athletes I coach do the same. Like Jonathan said, there are a lot of variables that can affect it. And in his case, just being at a race, that alone could nudge his heart rate up a little bit. But all things being equal, you know, most of those variables not varied. It's the same environment that you're laying in bed, so I'm assuming you haven't had caffeine yet. But, you know, the similar circumstances day to day. If you notice, in my case, my waking heart rate's right around 40 BPM. Today I was more like 45, and I expected it because the last couple of days have been kind of hard, and yesterday's workout was difficult. So that's an indicator for me in particular to not train today. If I do anything, it's going to be easy because I know from experience and from watching my waking heart rate day to day, every day, that it's a little high right now. And that usually goes right along with a heightened level of fatigue. My body's still working to repair the damage I did in my last workout. So I got to give it a little more time to complete that process.
Chad, would you say that this is one of the most useful ways in which athletes can use heart rate?
Highly useful and accessible to anybody with, you know, heart rate measuring device. So yeah, it's probably about the best way to go.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Alex. I don't actually pay a whole lot of attention to my heart rate while I'm riding. I'll generally use it. It's an informative metric in post-ride analysis when compared to when having the constant of power always there with my power meter. This is definitely, at least in my case, this is where heart rate yields the most benefits for me. And one quick tip on this as well, I got a Fitbit that measures my heart rate optically, and it also records my resting heart rate. Keep in mind that the way Fitbit records the resting heart rate is it doesn't check your absolute lowest heart rate as you're sleeping. It algorithmically defines where that is and that it's slightly higher than what your lowest heart rate will be when you're sleeping, right? But it's kind of nice because once again, I see it, and you never know because I'm trusting in an algorithm and a medical or in a device here, an electronic device, but I see it as another variable that it eliminates. If I get startled and I wake up, I know my heart rate jumps up pretty quick before I can check it. But this one is just checking it all night, and then it defines what my resting heart rate is. So it's kind of a hands-free thing. And then within the Fitbit app, I can see that every night. And every day, I just see what my resting heart rate is, and it even graphs it for me. So I can see, like Chad said, the past few days for him have been hard. You'll be able to see that and expect certain trends as a result. So,
yeah, so in a real succinct, short little answer here, Adam, heart rate is actually very useful when it comes to measuring your recovery.
George, you say, when I did my first season of Trainer Road in the winter of 2013 and 2014, you followed the flow chart. And I assume, George, you're referring to the flow chart that we had to define or pick a certain training plan. You decided that you weren't a current rider and you had no base fitness, even though you did have good fitness. You had never embarked on such a serious indoor training program. So with 3 to 5 hours a week, you started on sweet spot base 1 and 2. Those are some of our base training plans. Excuse me. And then moved to intermediate build 1 and 2. Those are plans that they're build plans that are in our archived area. And then you found them to be excellent. Last winter, you were ill for a couple months and started late, just on tour of Sufferlandry and then straight into the climbing road race program, which worked okay for me. But I didn't see the same FTP increase as in my longer training the previous years. No surprises there. Perfect. I'm glad you recognize that. But this year, I'm planning to start in the next month or so, and I'll have plenty of time over the winter. I have plenty of base fitness left from the summer, but listening to your previous podcasts, I reckon that I don't need to don't want to smash straight into a specialty phase and carry on with it for, say, 5 months. Am I correct in thinking I should return to the sweet spot base, albeit with a possibly high FTP that you currently have, and spend some months conditioning in preparation for a strong start next season? Your question is, even though I've got base fitness and I am not new to Trainer Road, should I still embark on sweet spot base kicking off the season? Chad, what do you say to that? Even though he's been riding and has fitness from previous years, should he go back to sweet spot base and follow the base build specialty?
Yeah, I think every year is a return to the same pattern that you follow each year, where you start with your base conditioning and then move forward from there. So even though you might have fitness right now, do you have base fitness? You know, is your muscle endurance where it needs to be before you move into like a build training phase? If you're a long course or longer endurance athlete, do you have sufficient aerobic base? These are things that actually have to specifically be addressed, or you're not going to develop them very well, which you kind of found out last year when you just used the Tour Sufferlandry and basically created a kind of a fragile peak. You know, your fitness was there, but it wasn't there very long. That's because you didn't have much to build it on. So if you've got the time, and with 5 months, it sounds like you do, I would absolutely recommend starting with a base phase.
Yeah, and then after that base, when you move in, sweet spot base is a great one for his situation, I would assume. Chad, am I wrong in that?
No, I think it's just fine, for sure.
And then going into the build plan, George, it really depends on what your goals are, so what type of event you're doing. For example, if you're training for a cross-country mountain biking in an area that's going to have you doing a lot of short, punchy, explosive climbs on short laps, or maybe a criterium racer or anything else like that, if you're leaning more towards short duration but high power output efforts that repeat during a race, short power build will be great. General is good for the majority of road racers, and also good for a fair amount of mountain bike racing if you find yourself doing very consistent and sustained climbs. And then the sustained power build is great for, you know, time trialist triathletes, or if you're even doing long hill climb TTs or anything else like that. That's how you would pick the build plans. So it's all just based off of the demands of your event. And then, of course, the same thing applies to the specialty plan. And it's pretty straightforward on picking the proper specialty plan there. So, yeah, that should get you on the track for what you need. And, Don, you actually had a question that applied to the base plans that you just submitted. But since we're talking about base here, you ask, do the sweet spot base and traditional base plans accomplish the same objectives, or is one better than the other? Chad, do they accomplish the same objectives?
To some extent, yeah. They further your base fitness or establish your base fitness. One's not necessarily better than the other. They're different approaches. So with traditional, it's more of a long, slow approach where you use low intensity to cultivate aerobic fitness. So, you know, fat metabolism largely. But through the 12 weeks and the three phases within it, so 4 weeks, 4 weeks, and 4 weeks, it gets gradually more intense such that you finish it at about the place, about the place where you kind of start the sweet spot based phase. So sweet spot kind of throws you right into it and doesn't spend a lot of time cultivating aerobic fitness and kind of dives right into the muscular endurance. So it's kind of a quicker fix, more intensity, more variety, but probably a less well-established base, but still a very usable one. You can still race a whole season on a sweet spot base and then maybe like a revisit to sweet spot base sometime mid-season. Whereas with traditional base, you just have to plan farther out. And it suits athletes who have, you know, maybe a greater level of fitness and they need to find a way to take their fitness to a new level. And then like long course triathletes and people who are going to spend long times working at a highly aerobic work rate. It's a better fit for them. So it to a large extent boils down to what type of athlete you are, how much time you have, what your training history is, and a few other factors.
Yeah. Any time I've encountered an athlete that claims that they've plateaued in their fitness, I always recommend to start their next season off with a traditional base, because like Chad said, it does wonders for building that deep aerobic fitness that you can later build upon, with more specialized, stuff.
So you can see traditional base as a wider base, sweet spot as a narrower base that gets you fitter a little bit quicker.
Yeah, you can visualize it like a pyramid of fitness.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great points. The next question by Travis. You mentioned that you really enjoy Trainer Road. That's awesome. That's what we're all about. And you ask, when it comes to mixing the trainer workout with road rides, I've got some questions. I'm looking to get faster. Currently, my average speed is 20 to 21 miles an hour on some group rides, but I want to get up to 24 miles an hour while riding alone. What can I do? My current training plan goes like this: Sunday, 58 miles in 3 hours, Monday off, Tuesday, 45 minutes of VO2. Hopefully that's not sustained. That might be pretty tough. Wednesday, easy for a 1 hour spin. Thursday, 45 minutes of VO2 intervals. Friday off. Saturday, 60 mile group ride. So definitely not a power-based plan that you have right now. But the objective that you want is you're looking to get faster and you want to increase your average speed from 20 or 21 miles an hour up to 24 miles an hour while riding alone. This one's kind of tough because you're going for increasing speed, and speed is relative. Keep in mind, the only problem with having speed-based goals in many situations, unless it's a TT course that you expect conditions to be similar on or a course that you've ridden very often, the only problem with putting a speed goal down is the fact that certain elements will very much affect your speed, from wind to all sorts of different things, heat and everything else. But Chad, it looks like he's trying to just increase his ability to sustain a higher amount of power over any duration of time. In most cases extended, it looks like about, at the very least an hour long ride every time, but in many cases more than that, up to 3, maybe even 4 hours. What do you suggest?
So Travis, pretty simply, you're looking at improving your muscular endurance. So looking at your weekly structure, the first thing that jumps out at me is you don't really have anything that does exactly that. I don't know what the composition of your group ride is on Saturday. That could involve a fair amount of it. The rest of your workout, VO2 max is all good and fine for increasing aerobic capacity, and that will in turn lift your muscle endurance a little bit. But you need to spend some time addressing muscle endurance specifically, because you're looking to be able to basically turn the pedals harder, turn the pedals harder for longer. And that, in a nutshell, is what muscular endurance is. So that's sweet spot work. Sweet spot work and then some threshold work. And then you can probably see greater benefits from the VO2 max work you're doing too. But I think you're kind of putting the cart before the horse a little bit by addressing your VO2 max workout prior to better establishing your muscle endurance. So in your case, if you haven't followed any of our plans, I would recommend jumping into sweet spot base.
Perfect. Chad, not Chad Timmerman, but another Chad. This question was submitted this week as well. You ask, or you give us the situation of having workouts that have repeating, where you're repeating the same interval over and over. And when you're in the middle of those workouts, you ask, is it better to lower the intensity or just take a break when I feel like I just can't continue at the prescribed intensity level? So a situation where you're feeling tired, the intervals are really tough. Is it better to just not pedal for 10 seconds, Chad, and take a quick break and get back in? Or is it better to just lower the intensity by, I don't know, say 3% or so across the whole ride? What do you think?
Yeah, this is a great question, Chad, and it's kind of a complex answer, but it boils down to the type of interval and the time of year. Typically, the longer intervals have more room for flexibility when it comes to trimming the duration of the intervals. So if you're doing like a 20-minute threshold or sweet spot interval and you're just going slower, 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 just kind of falling apart, a 30-second back pedal can revive you, can get you back in there at your target power. Happens again, you're just a little fatigued, so knock it down 5%. It's not going to drastically alter the objectives of the workout. You're still training, you know, in that case, muscle endurance. It's still there with just a little bit of a decrease to make it manageable. When it comes to the higher intensity stuff, like the VO2 max repeats and your anaerobic work, those are very much about a specific intensity. So basically you go as hard as you can, hold that intensity. When you can't hold it anymore, that might be the end of the interval. If that happens repeatedly, that might not be the right day to do a workout that's intense. But in the case of the shorter ones, small drops in intensity, you can maybe get away with, you know, maybe VO2 max work prescribed at 120%, you do it at 115, still very much on track, but you start going down to 110 or lower than that, you're missing the point of the workout. And you're probably going to be better benefited with another day's rest, come back fresher, do the interval as prescribed.
Henry, as a long course triathlete, I do all of my A races in aero position, and this is the area I want to be good at as a cyclist. Last season, I did pretty much all my trainer row workouts in an upright position. The reason being that I was able to produce more watts, you said about 20 watts more, compared to your aero position. Also, I could not complete any of the workouts in my aero position as I did my FTP test in an upright position, and thus the goals of the workouts were just too high for me. Would it make more sense to do all of my trainer road FTP tests and all trainer sessions in an aero position and have less watts, or should I aim to dish out the maximum wattage thus riding in an upright position? So should he go for more power, or should he train in the position that he should be riding at? Alex, do you have any insight on this as far as, should he just really be focused on putting out the most power, or should he train in the racing position that he plans to race in?
Well, Chad, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that when you do the FTP test, you should do FTP tests in whatever way best suits you.
Correct.
You know, find out what your actual FTP is. And then from there, you know, ideally if you're going through the progression, our plan progression throughout your year, you're going to spend time working on putting out more power in a potentially less powerful position, such as your aero TT bars. So I would, you know, test to the best of your abilities, and then utilize less intense workouts to try and hone your power output in whatever position that you will eventually be racing in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I addressed this question, or I answered this question formally in the help center, I believe it was. And I'm actually going to pull right from that answer because it's a good question. And none of these questions aren't good questions. They're all good questions. But this one in particular, I know a lot of people come up against this. So I'm happy to address it. It comes down to three things, really. Like Alex said, FTP is FTP. You're trying to measure your fitness. So whatever position best demonstrates your fitness and gives you the best measure of your functional threshold power, that's what you do. Do that so that you have the proper number to base all your other workouts on. Secondly, aero athletes, and we all are to some degree, have to adapt that power to their position. So at some point, you're going to have to start finding a way to utilize high percentages, you know, or access high percentages of your fitness, regardless of your position on the bike. And if your position costs you some of that power, well, you have to decide, is that power trade-off worth it? Am I a little faster in the wind, or do I need that, or do I benefit more from that little extra bit of power if I sit just a little taller? And then the third thing is the conditioning. The workouts are one of two things. They're either position independent or they're position related. The position independent, we're just chasing a physiological response. We're trying to maximize your VO2 max, improve your muscular endurance. So when those workouts are very demanding, just watch target power. We're looking for something specific. Then if it's position related, you have to be able to create that power in the position that you're going to use in your competition or your events. So you have to, at some point, start doing workouts that are race intensity in that position. And again, if you can't hold your power, you have to decide, does the aerodynamic benefit compensate for the loss in power? Typically it doesn't. I'm of the opinion that you try to figure out how to be the most powerful and then adapt your position such that your power doesn't suffer. So in the case of Henry here, my recommendation was to do his higher intensity work, his stuff that's 95% and above threshold, give or take, seated upright, and then do his lower intensity work, being that he's a, or I don't know if he is a, what type of athlete is him?
Yeah, long course.
Long course triathletes. Yeah, so for him, he just has to be able to hold his aero position at, you know, roughly 80% of threshold. That's about what most, it's in the ballpark of what most triathletes are going to do over a 112-mile bike leg. And then that varies athlete to athlete. So a 40K time trialist is going to have to be able to put out threshold power in an aero position. A criterium rider is going to have to be able to hit it at 120, 150% for short periods of time in the drop bars. So that's where that position-related training comes into play.
And there are things you can do off the bike to maximize your power output in an aero position. I know that back when I used to race, my big limiter in the TT position was flexibility. So if I worked on my flexibility off the bike and, you know, was able to be comfortable in that position, I was thusly able to put out more power. So yeah, off the bike, you can benefit too.
That's a good point. So when you decide that, you know, I'm more concerned with my power or my position is costing me power, several things can be the issue. Could be bike fit, could be a position that's too extreme, could be a flexibility limitation like Alex just mentioned.
Yeah, and also it can be difficult for you at first if you don't spend sufficient time in your aero position or just any different position. Just the simple act of breathing deeply and efficiently can feel very unnatural. I know, especially down in an aero position on a TT bike. And that's one thing, I think a common theme that all of us have mentioned here is the fact that in order to be able to increase your power output in a given position, you need to spend more time in that position. And as you do that, you'll be forced to breathe harder and breathe efficiently in those positions. I know, Chad, you always remind in the workout text on our workouts, you're always reminding us to, and in fact, many workouts even suggest for different intervals, if you have a set of five intervals that are the same interval, just repeated five times. I've been put in different positions on the bike many times at your request via the workout text. And you're always encouraging us to focus on breathing efficiently and not just getting down into your aero bars and suddenly tensing up because you're in race mode. It's really important to get in there and to get comfortable with that.
Absolutely. It's like anything else. It has to be practiced. It is a skill. Riding aerodynamically is a skill. There's no two ways about it. And if you don't practice it, you can't expect to develop a big engine sitting upright comfortably, you know, with a fan blasting you in the face and maybe your head looking down at the ground, and then expect to go outside, get into an aero position with a helmet slightly obscuring your view, manage to hold your head up and still generate that target power. You have to practice it.
So that's even an excuse to kind of look like a goober and wear your helmet inside on a trainer. So
you know, it is. It doesn't mean you have to do it often, but you should. If you've got your position and you think this is the one that you're going to use, it does work for you. Your power's not suffering. You feel, you know, somewhat slippery. Then put your helmet on. Put your sunglasses on. See if anything is obscuring your view, because I've made this mistake and I've gotten out there, and sure enough, the top edge of my sunglasses blocked my view such that I had to ride a little bit higher. And it was in my head the whole ride thinking, oh man, I'm not even holding my position. The race isn't going the way I wanted it to. I mean, I was already psyched out directly off the line.
Just don't record yourself and put it up on YouTube afterwards. Nobody else needs to know. Just keep it to yourself.
No one needs to see that.
All right. So to recap, I guess, Henry, you should assess in the position in which you can get a true assessment of your FTP. And then as you train, you should aim to, and I think Chad's suggestion is fantastic when you're looking, you know, the higher intensity efforts of, you know, above threshold, do those in the position that you at least can meet those interval targets. And then for your lower intensity stuff, when you're looking around 80% FTP and everything else, try to spend as much time as possible in that aero position to train your body to operate efficiently there in every way. So, Caleb, you ask, or you mentioned that you've reviewed the info that we've put together regarding multiple peaks, but it tends to look at how to keep peak fitness when a couple of events are within weeks or a couple of months of each other. For our cross-country Olympic season, and for those that don't know, those are just normal cross-country mountain bike races around 60 to 90 minutes. Races are monthly for 8 months starting in March, with every race equally important for the overall series points. So not unlike what many criterium racers actually go through. How is it best to approach this, and which plan should be used when? I'm a cross-country Olympic mountain biker as well. I don't mean to imply that I'm an Olympian. That's just a discipline we do. But I endure a very similar circumstance that you do, in the sense of maintaining peak fitness, or I should say having a longer season. But Chad, you gave me some advice on this year. What would you recommend for a person that's looking to maintain fitness for a pretty high intensity race format like this for 8 months?
Okay. So, Caleb, what you've done is actually pointed out a hole in our training plan offering. So out of our some 80 plans, we don't have anything that addresses the weekend racer, the guy who's hitting it weekend after weekend after weekend and wants to maintain a reasonably high, maybe not peaked, but a reasonably high level of fitness for quite a long time. Because of this, I'm actually developing some of these, and we'll have them in time for April, May, so that riders like yourself who race frequently can hold a lot of that fitness without trying to peak for a very specific period of time. Outside of that, you can build your fitness to a point and then just kind of ride that semi-peak or that somewhat of a peak until you start to see a little bit of a slip. And then, you know, important or not, a couple of those weeks are probably going to have to see a little bit of a downturn where maybe you just return to some sweet spot training or some, you know, base training of some sort and then get back into it. Maybe restart your specialty plan. That's an interim fix and not a great one. So I'm hoping that by the time you need a plan that accommodates a frequent race schedule, those will be in place.
Yeah. You know, and many times too, you get to peak form. Let's say March is your first race. You peak in March or April. You've been training hard and you find that peak form, and all you want to do is, you're like the cookie monster looking for cookies. Like you're a race monster and you're looking for races to win because suddenly you've hit peak form. And what happens many times is you ride that wave, but that's just like many waves. It crashes to an end at some point. It's not sustainable forever.
Or it just peters out.
It can get pretty tough. Yeah, exactly. And that's many times the way that it does crash down, right? It's not anything too dramatic. It's just the fact that you simply aren't able to perform at the level that you did before. And it's really frustrating. I know that much. So
it's a hard thing to walk away from. When you're performing well, you want to take advantage of it. You want to keep repeating these high-end efforts, but they can only last for so long. So you have to pay attention to when your form is starting to decline, when you're maybe not having as much fun anymore, maybe you're getting sick, mildly injured, whatever, and then, you know, take some sort of break. And regardless of these race-structured plans, that holds true anyway.
Yeah, you should really look at your race, even though you have 8 months of racing, you should really try to identify key events within that. And it would be great to be able to perform at every one very well, but for each of us, although your peak may not be the same as Nino Schurter's peak or as same as Chris Froome's peak or something like that, you certainly may not be as fast as they are, but just the same. They're at peak fitness, you're at peak fitness. And since you're a mountain biker, you'd relate to this. If you watch Schurter this year in the World Cup, for those that don't know, he's the World Cup champion, or world champ, I should say. He's an incredible rider, but he did not win every race this year. And he came into the season actually, and his results fluctuated. And then towards the end, he just went on a tear and there was no stopping him.
Yeah, for an eight month stretch of racing, you're going to see some ebb and flow, some peaks and valleys. You can't be fast that whole time. So it'd be my advice would be to target certain segments of it. So maybe you're carrying a lot of fitness coming out of your preseason into your early competitive season. So you target those first four weekends and, you know, hopefully have a good run at it. Then maybe you back it off for two weekends and then target the next series, or maybe you start the season strong, finish the season strong. But either way, pick out segments of it where you expect your fitness to be at its highest, and then accept that at some point your fitness is going to decline. And that's the time where you're either going to have to settle for less satisfying results or maybe just skip a race or two.
Keep
in mind that everyone else that you're racing against is in the same boat. You know, and all of your opponents cannot stay in peak, they can't stay peaked for that entire 8 months either. But you kind of structuring things prior to going into it, that will give you a leg up on them.
Yeah, there's always going to be those freaks who are just so fit that even when they're not at their top fitness, they're still beating you. That doesn't mean they don't see these same peaks and valleys, though.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. Because we're all so ego driven that's many times the hardest thing. A lot of people say fantastic things about us when we're on form, and then they all ask what's wrong with you once you aren't performing at that level. But you have to put that out of your mind. And Chad, you mentioned the fact that your fitness will ebb and flow over an 8 month period. And it's best to be intentional and proactive about that, like we've said from beforehand, and know where you want your fitness to be in peak form. This year for me, it was March and April. I wanted to have, I didn't necessarily care if it was absolutely my best performance, but I wanted to bring myself up to a peak of sorts at that point. And then I knew that May was not going to be a great month for me. And I also knew that June, the beginning of June, was going to be a little slow, because my next peak was the middle of July, and this year I absolutely nailed it on both of those peaks. I trended, and I was trending my fitness based off of that, and it was a successful season. I didn't win every race, but anytime I got close to peak fitness, I picked the right events and trained right, and it worked out really well for me.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You either plan for it or just brace yourself for periods of disappointment.
Yep. Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Scott, you say, I enjoy riding with a group of local triathletes on the weekends. I know group rides are less than ideal when compared to a structured trainer workout. Since you really do structured intervals, should I target the training plans TSS, in other words, a trainer road training plans TSS, instead of riding at a set mileage? I think that it's always best to stick to your training plan, Chad, but is this an exception, or do you have any info to add to this?
No, I think to the extent that you can, you have to shape that ride around the workout's goals. So if you're trying to closely follow your training plan, don't go out there and just try to stick a particular TSS. I mean, you can get the same TSS riding for 3 hours at 60% as you can, and this isn't exact, but riding for, you know, an hour and 15 at 90%. So, but they're two very different training stimuli. So if at all possible, you know, look at your workout and say, I know today I'm supposed to do four 10-minute intervals at 95%. So if at all possible, you know, stick yourself at the front of this group, and assuming 95% keeps you at the front of this group, and try to get your intervals in. And if it means, you know, leaving the group, riding away from them, or even falling off the back so that you can get a few structured intervals in, that's kind of what you got to do, at least if you want to stick to the intention of your training plan.
And just communicate that also to your group ride mates. Let them know that you want to ride together. That's why you're out there, because like you said, it's enjoyable. And that's a really key thing, that you can't just remove all the fun and enjoyment from riding. That can actually go a long way to helping you in your training, at least mentally, at the very least. So, but let them know beforehand. Don't be the group ride guy, that the Johnny drop that shows up and just drops everyone off in the beginning. But definitely let them know that you have some objectives that you want to achieve with this ride. And as long as you let people know in a group ride, I haven't seen them get upset. It's when you don't let them know, then they can get a little upset. But then again, they're triathletes, so they might not be the stereotypical group ride roadies that are very strict about those things.
Yeah, but short answer, don't worry so much about the TSS so much as the type of workout that you're after.
Perfect. Juan, you've been using Trainer Road for 2 months, and you've done some FTP testing so you can update your FTP inside Trainer Road. Your question is, how can you translate this FTP into heart rate zones to use it outside with my Garmin when not on the trainer with power? So I assume you're probably using virtual power since you don't have a power meter wand, and you're looking at how to convert the power zones that you have to heart rate zones for outdoor training. Chad, can this be done, or should he be taking a different approach with his heart rate data? What should he do there?
It can certainly be done. It's going to be a bit of work, and it's always going to be subject to all the things that affect heart rate. But if you keep that in mind and do your best to limit those things that will affect your heart rate, you can kind of determine over time that, you know, when I'm riding between 85 and 90% or roughly in the sweet spot, my heart rate falls here, a bit of a range. And you can set very personal heart rate zones and then try to recapture them outside. Again, you're gonna face certain challenges. A hot day is gonna bump your heart rate up more than it would training indoors with a fan in your face. So it'll be a bit of a challenge, but it's not impossible. So just kind of try to correlate particular heart rates with particular power outputs.
Also, keep in mind the somewhat variable nature of virtual power. I mean, isn't that the case, Alex? I know you see a lot of this with support tickets, with people using any type of established resource they found online to compare power output to a heart rate or anything else. But virtual power does vary somewhat based on a few different circumstances. Is that correct?
Yeah, it can vary based on rolling resistance, depending on the type of trainer you have. If it's a fluid trainer that might not have very stable fluid within it, and as it heats up, it changes the nature of the power to speed ratio. But typically, as long as you maintain a consistent amount of tire pressure in your tire and amount of tension on the tire from the roller, things should be pretty consistent. So, and as long as you're not changing if you have a magnetic trainer, you know, you could change the level there. But as long as you keep most of the variables that go into your virtual power setup consistent, it should be okay to equate to heart rate zones.
Perfect. Icarus, you say I use Trainer Road's training plans, but I want to adjust them to allow for my weekend club rides and cyclocross races on the Saturday, Sundays that I have these days. How can I best incorporate the cyclocross season and the club ride into the program so I continue to build and develop ready for next season? So, Icarus, I don't know exactly if you're if you could let us know what training plan you're currently doing, that would be great. But I assume, based off of what you say, that you're in a base or build, because you're talking building and developing and get ready for next season. So if you can, let us know what training plan you're doing. But regardless of that, if he's in a build or a base phase and he wants to incorporate cyclocross races on the weekend, Chad, how does he best to go about that?
I would just swap out your races for your Saturday or Sunday and or Sunday workouts. It's really that simple. So those are typically the longer workouts, and they're typically the more, at least in a specialty phase, they're the ones that more emulate the actual racing demands. So if you're doing an actual race, you might actually be getting arguably a better workout than you could with the training plan. But don't double up if that's what you're asking. And I have fielded that question before. So riders think that they have to do their Saturday workout, but they're also racing, so they're going to do both. Absolutely not. One or the other is just fine.
Yeah, and it's important also to you know, Chad mentioned the fact that you may be getting a better workout. I think that the key there is if you follow your training plan, you'll be getting the workout that was prescribed for you. However, of course, racing always ends up pushing us to different places where we wouldn't go otherwise. So you can definitely get some benefits from that. I'd also recommend with cyclocross races, something that a lot of people don't do is you might do, it's common to do multiple races throughout the day because they're pretty short, generally, you know, anywhere from 35, 40 minutes to up to an hour or so. If that's the case and you have something longer prescribed for the day, don't be afraid of just putting in some easy spinning afterwards or anything else. It's a cyclocross race, so it's not too big of a deal. I mean, am I going, like Chad said, you don't want to push yourself. You don't want to feel like you have to do your trainer ride, then go race or anything else like that. But after your cyclocross race, don't feel like you absolutely have to get off the bike then. Is that correct, Chad? I mean, it wouldn't hurt to add in some mileage if you're just doing a 35-minute race.
Absolutely. I mean, if you've got a three-hour ride on the docket and you've got a 30-minute cross race, go do your race and then go ride for a couple and a half hours afterward.
Yeah, that, I think that's a great thing. And also, it's the perfect time to do it, too. Cool weather, it's nice. So don't have to worry there. David, I commute to work 4 to 5 days a week, which has given me a massive level of base fitness. But I want to incorporate dedicated trainer workouts because the variables on my commute are too inconsistent, wind, weather, and traffic, for adequate training. Plus, weekly group rides. So at this point, I'm looking at a schedule of at least 8 rides that can reliably be scheduled. Any idea how to fix this? Maybe short focus sessions? You're just wondering what to do there with all of that. So you commute 4 to 5 days a week. It's giving you a lot of time on the bike. So you said you're just building base fitness there, but it's definitely nothing it's hard to control because of the variables. So you say you're looking at your schedule of at least 8 rides that can't reliably be scheduled. Any idea of how to fix this? So a guy that wants to build specific fitness, but has variables.
So this is potentially an easy fix, David. I don't know how long or taxing your commutes are, but I'm going to assume you have the option to keep them moderate to mild. So you could, I'd recommend doing a couple days, maybe a Tuesday, Thursday interval schedule. Keep your commutes easy so that they're more restorative and more about aerobic endurance. So basically breathe through your nose sort of stuff. And then throw in that weekly group ride if and when you feel recovered enough to be able to hang in there. But it is a lot of riding for sure, but it doesn't have to be a lot of high intensity riding. So get your couple days of intervals in, there's your quality. Get your group ride in, there's your group and race experience. And then use the rest of it for recovery and just aerobic endurance work.
Yeah, I also, in the summer, I tend to commute more with the weather here. We get a fair amount of snow here in Reno. And one thing I would say is that if you can, at least I noticed this summer when commuting, I would try to use that, just like Chad said, I would try to use that as a constant. Like you said, there's a lot of variables that go into it, but just try to kind of be like a governor and try to focus on keeping your power output consistent. Even if you don't have a power meter, you can feel, don't be going for Strava KOMs on those commutes if you're getting in structured work otherwise and you're going to be feeling tired. Let those commutes just be commutes. That's an important thing.
I'd look at the commutes as active recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great perspective
to look at. Yeah, it's added base mileage for you. So you have basically 4 or 5 days of insured volume. That's terrific. So what you do outside of that is your quality, a couple days of it, and you've actually got a pretty solid training plan there.
Yeah, it helped me add a lot of volume to my training this year, that's for sure. Anders, you say, I don't really have any plans of racing in the up and coming season. Should I just continue training using the high intensity training plans that we have? Try losing some weight in the meantime, or you're trying to lose some weight in the meantime. What's the best approach to up your general cycling fitness? So somebody that's not necessarily planning on racing, Chad, and this is traditionally the season where a lot of racers are doing their base preparation and everything else. So what should a racer or what should a cyclist that's not planning on racing be doing right now?
You kind of have your pick of it. If your fitness is pretty good, and even if it is pretty good, you could do a sweet spot base plan. I mean, it's called a base plan, but there's a fair amount of challenge incorporated into that 12 weeks. And you can cherry pick too. You can just take, perhaps you're, riding outdoors on the weekends. So just to pick a couple, week one, pick a couple of those workouts to do during the week, just as fitness maintenance, maybe even fitness growers, and then spend your weekends as you see fit. But you've kind of got your pick of the litter. You can do really anything you want if you're just looking for general fitness and not looking to time it or build any particular kind of fitness.
Yeah, you did mention that you're trying to lose some weight in the meantime. Chad, is there... this one's pretty subjective too, but is there anything, does that
it
change
is, the answer it, at all? It comes down to how much time you have to devote to your weight loss. Clearly a lot of it's going to be influenced by your diet, but if you've got minimal time, just a couple hours a week, then those couple hours a week are best dedicated to intensity. So hard stuff, VO2 max stuff, even anaerobic stuff, perhaps some threshold stuff. If you've got more time to dedicate it to your training, 8, 10, 12 hours a week, then the lower intensity stuff that is allows you to get in a lot of volume and do it at a rate that largely utilizes fat for energy, then that's the other end of your options.
It's really common for people to bring up the fact that the low and slow approach, that low intensity and long rides, those are effective at burning fat, which they are. But Chad, it is important to take into consideration volume and its relation to your intensity, right? Because if you, like you said, if you only have a little bit of time to train every week, and just riding at low intensity, that's may not be the best way. Is that correct?
Yeah,
that may not be the best way to lose weight.
Low intensity is just going to burn calories slowly. So if you got a lot of time to dedicate to it, you'll end up burning a lot of calories. But if you've only got a little bit of time, then you kind of got to maximize and ramp up just how many calories you burn. And sure, you're going to be metabolizing or using more sugar and less fat, but you'll still be using a fair amount of fat. So it's the goal is, or has to become, when you only have a lot of time, to make up for your lack of time with a higher amount of intensity.
And the higher intensity stuff also ramps your metabolism up.
Absolutely, you know, does.
Even after the workout, you're burning more than you normally would.
Yeah, there's still a big post-exercise benefit there. So during the workout and what happens to your metabolism afterwards. It's not massive, but it's there. It's measurable.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a great point of confusion, or that's a big point of confusion, I think, that most people just assume that if I want to, because generally it comes as a big surprise, like suddenly, wait, to burn fat or to lose weight, I don't have to work out extremely hard. That's great, you know. But so generally that's a bold aha moment in people's minds, and it's pretty tough to shake your mind from that paradigm later on. But certainly, if you have less time, be judicious with how you're using it. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it's not like when you're working hard, you stop burning fat. You're still burning fat. You just aren't going to burn as much fat because you can't do it as long. So it's a trade-off between volume and intensity.
Yep. Lauris, you ask, or you mentioned there's a 40K TT specialty plan in Trainer Road. Will the same plan work good for shorter TTs of 10 to 15 kilometers, or is it better to choose another plan? Yeah, Chad, you can take this one too.
Yeah, that plan actually works really well. It's again, comes down to muscle endurance. So even with a 10 or 15 mile time trial, you're still going to be out there for 20, 30, 40 minutes. So it still boils down to how high your muscle endurance is. And a fair amount of the workouts in the earlier parts of the week and maybe the later part of the plan, but either way, within that plan, address efforts at 108% of threshold, 105% of threshold, which for a shorter time trial could be right about where you're working. So that plan is a good catch-all for really any time trial distance.
Yeah, we see it being used by athletes of all different disciplines. Even some mountain bikers. I know right now we have our community manager, Trevor DeRose. He's a professional mountain biker. And the type of training that he's doing right now actually is aligning very closely to that. And he's training for La Ruta de los Conquistadores down in Costa Rica. So that's a very, very tough race. And it's probably something that you wouldn't think aligns with the time trial. But he's got long, sustained climbs that are going to be around 10 to 15K over and over, or longer, all the way up to 40K or more. And it's actually that type of training is aligning for him right now, too. So yeah, it's definitely not just time trialists, right, Chad? I mean, it's about the duration of the effort and the intensity of the effort.
Yeah, it's about building sustained muscular endurance. So,
yeah, perfect. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for joining us. That'll do it for this week's episode of the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. Remember to head over to iTunes and to leave us a review. 5-star review if you can, if you feel like it's justified, and give us a rating there. And any type of review that you want to leave is hugely beneficial for us. Also head over to soundcloud.com/trainerroad, or just search for us on SoundCloud and you'll find us there. And that's another way to get these podcasts. And you can just find us on iTunes once again by searching for Ask a Cycling Coach or Trainer Road and or cycling. You'll find us up there, and hopefully your reviews and ratings will get us right up to the top. So that's the goal. Thanks again, guys. We'll see you in a couple weeks for the next edition, and happy training in the meantime.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, guys.